Dave Bullen, as always, our TSN Hockey Insider on a Friday, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Dave?
Minus 22, gentlemen. Very well, thank you. I thought it only fitting if we start with the weather. Across the board, I keep on my weather chart, I keep where my daughters are in their various cities. Everybody's well under par today. Okay. Well under par.
Doesn't matter. Yeah, it doesn't matter where you are. It's
matter
it's cold.
Where you are this morning, it is cold. Other than in Florida at the All-Star break. So yep. Maybe they chose the right city in the right year to do this.
Absolutely. All right, we may get to, if we have time, get to some All-Star stuff. Probably not, but I thought, boy, I had written down some notes for our conversation with you today, Dave, you know, some stuff over the first half kind of deal. And then all of a sudden, the Ottawa Senators dropped a press release late into the night last night announcing they had fired the head coach of their American Hockey League team, Troy Mann, in the midst of his fifth season as coach in the AHL. I know that you've worn many hats as a player, an NCAA coach, a scout, and then as part of the management team with the Maple Leafs, and you ran the Marlies for 4 years, and Simmer ran Washington's farm team for a bunch of years as well. So no better guys to talk about this decision. So first and foremost, a coaching change in decision at the American Hockey League level for, as the press release says, performance-related reasons. Would you consider that to be relatively unusual?
Yes, I would. And, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into this. We don't know them all yet as we sit here this morning. I had a nice chat with Pierre and Trent and Ryan on Tuesday morning. So they were all together in Montreal. And, you know, they're all together a lot around now because the trade deadline is looming and they're meeting with their scouts. They're getting everything in organized. So they are together. But the timing of this, it's a pretty standard philosophical, I think, arrangement. I spent a lot of time with the American League head office as well. I was actually the chair of the executive committee. I was on the executive committee for 4 years, but I was the chair of the executive committee. And so we talked a lot as a group about philosophy of American League teams. And there are teams that own their own American League team. There are still teams that are independent. They're independently owned teams. So Syracuse is independently owned by Howard Dolgan, who supplies Tampa Bay. And they do it very flawlessly and obviously develop their prospects very well. And sometimes that's difficult, whereas the Chicago Wolves have always been a team that would try and buy the best team and buy veteran players and buy a championship. So that's a very different philosophy. But most of the teams are really interested in development. It's so important right now. And in Belleville, development has been very good. It would be way above average for the players that we've seen come through. And there's lots of cases that we can look to. And I guess one of my favorites is Drake Batherson, because he's a guy who started there, fourth round pick, not as heralded, worked his way up, had success there, came up, had success. I was there for his first NHL goal in Ottawa. And then went back down and kind of polished things and finished it off and then came up and is up to stay. And so that's a perfect model in many ways. And the question, when you would call an American League coach, you would say, who's ready? And the questions that would come back, what role do you need? Tell me exactly what you need. That's what I had two coaches in the American League. I had Dallas Aikens and Steve Spott. And I went through the hiring process with Steve Spott, and we talked so much about exactly what we're talking about right now. What's my job? What do you want from me? And we want you to develop players within the context of winning. We want to put them in a winning environment, and that's the balance that's sometimes a challenge. We don't want to have all veteran players down there that we overpay for that are capable of winning an American League championship if there's nobody developing or learning from them. You need the right guys in the veteran roles. You need a lot of character, because just as in the NHL, you want a partner for that young defenseman, you want a partner for the young defenseman in the American League. And then the other question that sometimes is harder to answer, who deserves to come up? Because sometimes a kid deserves to come up, but he's simply not in the organizational plans. And it's not in the best interest of the big team to call him up. So you play that balance. But we have the most recent example would be a Ridly Greig, who came up for the first time, looked very ready, looked to be in place. And the difference in the wording, the exact wording they used, it wasn't glaring to me at all that someone came up and didn't understand what Ottawa was doing from an organizational standpoint. It didn't. It appears from a Rourke Chartier to the defensemen that have come up, to the most recent being Ridley Gregg, it appeared to be seamless when they came up. And so maybe more will, I'm sure more will come out about this as we go. For what we know right now, no, it is highly unusual. And I would assume at some point we'll have more information.
Would you also agree, Pooley, that historically winning at the American level actually means nothing as to the direction of the NHL club?
No, I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I really don't. And I'll give you an example, and that was the Norfolk team that Tampa had. And because they were developing a coach in John Cooper, they were developing, so who would have been on that team? Tyler Johnson, Palat, Panic. They were all on that team, Simmer. So it's rare that you get that much. But you can see it can happen.
But those players, again, I've been around it a long time, Pooley. I'm just saying,
sure.
Though, but that team, those are not the functional. That's not why they won Stanley Cups. Developing players. Like Luke Richardson developed Stone to Pajot. They never won at all. I know the history of the American Hockey League. My point
Absolutely.
Being, in Belleville, Belleville doesn't have to win games for Troy Mann to do a good job. And I guess I'm saying, based on the release, to be more successful, I just can't see how a guy could have done a better job for what he's there for, is to develop players. I couldn't care less how many games they win.
You don't, but you want them in a winning environment, Simmer.
But the Chicago Wolves ruined the Atlanta Farm team.
Absolutely.
Sure, like the Marlies bought a Calder Cup a few years ago. Like
they
what is the core of that group that was bought that is now functioning to the Toronto Maple Leafs that are key pieces of what's going on in Toronto right now?
No, not at all. But in my last 3 years plus with the Marlies, we played in 9 playoff series. And I would say that had a lot to do with the young Morgan Riley played, young Nazem Kadri played. So it happens within the context of winning. You want guys in that environment. Yeah. But no, I couldn't agree more. And that's what I said. The purpose is not to buy a championship.
Yeah, no,
the purpose is to win games, though, within the context of developing players. You don't want them in an environment. And there's some philosophical difference here. That will be what arrives from this. It may have been about an individual's. It may be about specifically an individual. It may be about, you know, the coaching of one of his assistants. There's something unusual here, Simmer.
No,
sure.
I agree, Pooley. And a few years ago, that was a neat part. Like, and that's where my hat kind of went off to him, is that the year that they had Norris, I just said to people, it's so rare. Like, and again, I follow this forever. Teams that win generally are older American League players. That year they got caught off by COVID. It was like, wow, all your best players are young players and you're one of the best teams in the league. I just thought, wow, this is like your dream formula without spending a crazy amount of money.
No question.
Yeah.
No question. But it does happen. But you don't want to be mired in a situation where your best young kids go to the rink every night knowing they're going to lose. And it's the balance there. And you do need enough. You have to spend enough money, Simmer, to have the right senior players around your youth. Mm-hmm. And that's on and off the ice. You want the right environment. You want all those things. You want essentially you're a classroom. You're a bona fide master's classroom and trying to put the finishing touches on players to move forward. And part of that is winning. But it's absolutely not the old Chicago Wolves. It's not. And you know, they just paid, like, you were allowed to have 5+1 veteran players who played a certain amount of games, they'd have 9 or 10 and rotate them in and out. And, you know, and they were paying them more than anybody else in the league. And so if you were a senior player, Steve Maltese is a classic sim. I mean, how long was he a Chicago Wolf? I mean, he was older than the owner and he was still playing. But that was a different model that was trying to fill their building in Chicago, and they won. And it was a whole different atmosphere in that. But the ideal one that I mentioned in Norfolk happened, it just happened, where, you know, Tyler Johnson was a free agent and the other two kids, I mean, Palat was, excuse me, a 7th-round draft pick. And they weren't heralded prospects, but they were great young players that were with a great young coach, and they won 20-some straight, and then they stomped through us in the finals. And, you know, Dustin Tokarski was great in net, but they did it within the balance. But when I mentioned those three players, they may have been the only three players that went on, Simmer, from a development standpoint. But it finally tuned those players, and they stepped in the NHL, and they were used to winning.
All the players at an American Hockey League level aspire to not be where they are. They want to move up to the National Hockey League, and I would think that the majority, if not all, of the coaches would like to do the same. Is it beyond playing time, which is the obvious thing of, hey, a coach is not doing it the right way. He's just playing all his old American Hockey League veterans, not the guys we want to develop. Are those conversations, you know, based on your history and based on what you've observed, that need to happen a lot between organizations and its minor league coach? Or is it pretty apparent when the coach is maybe not doing the best by the organization, but maybe doing the best by himself or for himself?
It's an absolute necessary, that communication. It's a must. That's not an option, JR. It's simply not. And if that's the case, it can't continue. And, you know, Dallas Aikens and I in particular, I mean, his wife used to joke that I talked to him more than she did. And, you know, we were on the phone constantly. I mean, we started days on the phone. We ended days on the phone. And we built, you know, we obviously as well had the advantage of having the minor league team right in the city. So there wasn't a day when I couldn't pop over to his office for a conversation. The absolute is the big team in this. It has to be. And that's why teams started buying their own minor league teams. And that's why they moved them closer to home so they could control them. They needed them closer to home for cap reasons. You couldn't have when I was in Anaheim, our minor league team was in Portland, Maine. It was 2 days of cap space to call a player up. You couldn't do it. And so that was the California start of that league, the American League, you know, in California. And you had to be closer to home. And that was the Belleville move. Even crossing the border was an issue. Now it's Belleville to Ottawa. It's seamless. But the absolute has to be the NHL team. It has to be. And so something went awry in that conversation. It didn't. There were no forewarnings of it because of the success of the players that had come up. And as I said, most recently, Ridly Gray.
I guess thoughts on that, Pooley, as well. Part of, and again, it's only a play, you know, the words in a statement. Part of falling in the line of the system, do you think there was resistance from Matt? I don't speculation. At the same time, do you believe the minor league team should always play the same system as the big team?
Well, the systems don't vary that much. I mean, they really don't. It's not like someone's playing an extreme left-wing lock, but it should be similar in that they should be able to come up and flow right in. That hasn't been glaring at all. But let's think out loud now. I mean, as you say this, I always get nervous when I think out loud and I'm on the radio. Ridly Gregg went down in an unusual situation, is not playing games, and is just practicing. That was the intent, correct?
Yes.
And did that create some sort of unusual conversation? And whose idea was that? Because that's unusual. You know, when I was asked, would he go down? My first reaction was, no, he's an NHL player. My second reaction was, he's 20 years old. I don't want to have 10 days without skating. And because that was asked of me on Tuesday, and my initial thought was, I think you asked me, JR, maybe Monday.
I asked you on Wednesday, and your answer, because we got a bunch of people after you went off, actually, because your answer was not the one I expected, to be honest, when you said, yeah, I do want him to play down there. If he's going to go down, I do want him to play.
Yeah, and so that maybe that precipitated a conversation that went in another direction, and that could happen as well. That's the only unusual thing that's happened recently where you would send an NHL player down to practice to keep him on skates but not play with the full intention of bringing him back up. Did that cause a philosophical conversation that went deeper, that went in a different direction? And it's the only thing from a timing standpoint that would make sense, correct?
Yeah.
Because nothing else, you know, their play is no different now than it was. When players have come up, they've appeared ready to the Ottawa Senators.
And to that, Pooley, and again, we try to examine every situation. My only thought on that was the only thing that would have been bad was giving them all the time off. I actually totally understood this whole move. And again, you're not trying to wrap people in bubbles, but he's been injured. You want him to come back. I don't think playing a couple of games is a big, but I thought what they did actually made a whole lot of sense, to be quite honest with you, because I didn't think the break would be a smart thing for him to just, he seems like the type of kid that wouldn't even be on vacation. He'd just be hanging around.
Yeah. I think it made total sense too.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen it before.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hadn't seen that exact situation. So to me, it was actually creative management, whether that was Ryan Bonus that said, you know, in charge of that team that said, what if we do this?
Yeah.
But did that precipitate a conversation that went in a different direction?
Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe we'll find out more. Maybe we won't. But very, very interesting. Okay, a couple other things that I wanted to bend your ear about that I forgot to ask you on Wednesday. And I think at that point we knew that Mark Stone had undergone back surgery. And, of course, he had won a back surgery at the end of last season to start the summer. Played to start this year. Now he's had another back surgery. They said successful, but indefinite in terms of a return. Is this potentially, Dave, something where they have a pretty good idea he'll be able to come back later, and it's a Kucherov thing where Mark Stone suddenly is healthy just in time for the playoffs and therefore on long-term injured, Vegas may have suddenly have a whole bunch of cap space available to them for trade over the next month?
Let's start with the successful surgery, because one of my close friends in South Bend at Notre Dame was a surgeon. And I said, have you ever come out of a surgery and say, oh, did I have a tough day? Man, did I have a tough day. And he was a golfing partner and he wasn't a very good golfer. So I would give him that one. And he'd say, here's the difference, coach. I have as much time as I need in there. You only have 60 minutes to play a game. And so, of course, it was a successful surgery. Anytime you get a cap-strapped team with something like this, that's your first thought in this day and age. But he is so important to that team, and they're not, you know, they're not a sure thing slam dunk in that West right now. It's all over the place. We're allowed to have favorite players too. He's one of my favorite players that I've covered. He just is. In terms of what he brings to a team, in terms of the glue factor, when you play with him, you're better, flat out. The four people on the ice are better. And the guys on the bench are better because they're watching him. He is literally one of my favorite players who's done as much with his skill set as any player that I've seen in my time covering the game. And he's that important to the team that I don't think you can risk it unless it's absolute. And the timing could be, you know, we could be within a couple of weeks or something. If that's the case, yes, they'll push it until the cap issue isn't a situation. But with a cap-strapped team, you do think that's where your mind goes, except Mark Stone's too important to say, you know, Kucherov was, but they were also in a comfortable playoff spot.
Right. That's a great point, because we only have to think back to Vegas last year leading up to the trade deadline, in which we had the whole Dadonov debacle, right, of him being traded to Anaheim, and that was all for cap-related reasons, and then they had to pull him back, and, you know, because Jack Eichel was coming off injured and all of that, and you're right. They were almost in the same position. I think they're on the outside looking in as far as the playoffs were concerned, but it was more about, hey, we still got to make the playoffs, let alone trying to finagle the system to make sure that we'll have, you know, almost a free player for the playoffs. So, yeah, you're right on that one.
It is too fine a line. It just is. And, I mean, they didn't make the playoffs last year. I mean, you think about that. If they did play that game, in fact, they've got a harsh reminder that you can't play that game. They didn't make the playoffs last year.
Does it feel like, for a lot of reasons, Pooley, they're kind of running out of track when you realistically look at where they're at from certainly 3 or 4 years ago?
Yes, and it was inevitable because they had to have every player available. You think of the highest profile players, and Mark Stone being one of them, Pacioretty being one of them, Jack Eichel being one of them, Pietrangelo being one of them, trade, free agency, whatever it is, they had to have that piece. And they were an absolute win-no. And I've told you this story before. We sat with the owner before they played a game, and there were five of us at dinner, three Vegas people and myself and my acquaintance. And the owner said to us, we will win a Stanley Cup within 6 years. And both guys on his side of the table spit their beer out and said, you know, like, seriously, we're going to win a cup in 6 years? Those were his guys. That was his mind. That was his philosophy. That's what he wanted to do. And everything was all in from day one with Vegas. That can't continue. If you look at their prospects, you look at the draft picks they've traded, you look at, you know, even a, you know, a Nick Suzuki excelling somewhere else, and that would have been in the Pacioretty deal. You can't continue to run at that pace with this system and not run out of players. Now, they've still got a good team, but, you know, are they going to win a cup with this team, particularly the way they're banged up? And it's a now philosophy there. And to me, as well as Logan Thompson's played in net, they still have questions on that team that say this isn't a clear Stanley Cup favorite.
All right, a final one. It's NHL All-Star Weekend, and it's easy for a lot of people. We're very cynical NHL fans to bag on you know, the league at the All-Star game and the skills competition. So is Dave Poulin I want to make sure I make some time to watch either the skills or the games, or I'll watch a condensed version later, or I have no interest. Where does Dave Poulin's allegiances lie?
I'll keep my eye on it, and I'll watch. And I think what they've done with the skills competition and to show the skills of the player is good. It's a tough one, guys. I played in the last couple of games that were games, and the first one was 86. That was my first All-Star game. It was also, there was a rookie on the West team. Toronto was still in the West, named Wendell Clark, who ran Mario Lemieux in the first period. And I mean ran him. And, you know, and our bench was like, what do you do? He's not really our teammate. Should we stick up for him? And then somebody said something after the first period, and somebody else said, yeah, well, we can't run Gretzky. He's got nine teammates here. And, you know, and so I played in that 4-3 game and then the 6-5 game in St. Louis. And those will never happen again. So I don't look at it as a game. I look at it as an event. I think they've been creative. I would put my most creative young group at the NHL offices in charge of it each year. And I think that's what they've done. And they've just tried to create interest and, you know, show the skills of the players. I will tell you firsthand, it's still very valuable for a young player to go to the All-Star game and to be around other players and to feel the self-esteem when you walk into that locker room and you see your jersey hanging and your name and number on that jersey, and you look around and see the other jerseys in that locker room. For me, it was Bossy and Trache and Larry Robinson and Ray Bourque, and it was unbelievable in terms of what it meant to me long-term, bringing back to my own locker room, and maybe a quiet conversation during the skills competition that Brady has with whomever, and that brings something back to him, to the Ottawa Senators. So I'm a fan of it. The league needs a break during the year. I also like the fact that they do have a legitimate break now. I think scheduling has done a great job with the fact that they do literally have 8 or 10 days off every team. Mm-hmm. And that's the most important part of the All-Star game, maybe, is making sure the league gets a break so we can have a terrific second half of the season.
I think I know the answer to this when you say that you were in one of the last couple of All-Star games where it, you know, there was actually a competition. I think I know the answer, but, you know, why did that go away?
You know, that year, in 86, Brian Trotcher was the head of the Players Association, I believe, and he came to us and said, okay, they want to do a skills competition, and we said, no, we're not doing it. It was still about hockey at that point. I think it went away as players no longer wanted to hit each other and compete, and whether it was, you know, it was almost like the players got together the following year in 89, I believe it was, or 88, 89 it would have been, and said, you know, we're not hitting each other. We're just not. And this is, we need a break, and we're not hitting each other. We're not playing a competitive game. And that was the one in Montreal. It was 23-21 or something like that.
Right.
And so I don't know. I think it was an unconscious decision that said, you know, we're not going to do this. And I don't know exactly how it started, because the last one in St. Louis was 6-5. Naslund had 5 or 6 points. Mario lit it up, and that was it.
And to that, Pooley, much like officiating, can we take some solace as hockey people that all the other sports fans complain about their sport the exact same way? All-Star Game's a joke. Officiating's terrible. I mean, this is where it's all gone. I mean, the NBA is just basically a warm-up game, right? You have the home run derby. Now you're playing flag football or whatever they're doing in the National Football League. This is the evolution where nobody would ever want to get hurt at one of these things.
Exactly. And this is for the kids. To me, if we can attract a group of youngsters who like, I don't know whether they're shooting in the ocean or some combination of golf and hockey or whatever they're doing this year that we don't know quite yet, if it attracts a young group, then I'm all for it. And that's what it's about. It's for the city it's in. It's for the players that go. And I do believe it's for the players that go, because I think every single player benefits in some way. You know, even a Sidney Crosby or a veteran player, Ovechkin, who's been at so many of them, Ovechkin may hang out with a young star and find something out or learn something, or, you know, could be, or just a mentality of a young player and what they're thinking right now. But it's for the youngsters, to me, to attract growth of the game. It's for the sponsors, obviously. It's for the city it's in. And maybe most importantly, Simmer, it's a week to 10 days off to make sure your team is fresh going into the next. I think that part is underlooked and underappreciated outside the game, and how important it is inside the game.
All right. By the time we reconvene with you on Monday, the games will actually be underway again for a bunch of teams. There's a pile of games on Monday. So enjoy a bit of a down weekend for you. Stay warm. Appreciate the time, as always, and I look forward to chatting with you again on Monday.
Have a great weekend, guys.